Welcome everyone to Courtside, a discussion of legal issues, hopefully legal issues that don't involve Donald Trump, and that's certainly the case today. Because today, on March 7th, 56 years ago, John Lewis and a bunch of American patriots tried to cross the Pettus Bridge in Selma. They were beaten, skulls cracked, and their bravery and conviction inspired the Voting Rights Act. And today I want to talk only about the Voting Rights Act. You know, we've talked about it in different episodes, around the margins, but today I really think it's worth focusing because 5 days ago, the Supreme Court heard a case that may decide the fate of the Voting Rights Act. And the case doesn't arrive in a vacuum. John Lewis, for the first time in 56 years, is no longer with us. And the case arrives against the backdrop of the most concerted effort to deprive people of the right to vote in generations. Indeed, just after the November election, over 100 different bills have been introduced to try and make it harder for people to vote. Now, it used to be that these kinds of bills, even if they were passed into law by state legislatures, wouldn't matter. And that's because of part of the Voting Rights Act. The Voting Rights Act had two different provisions in it. One was called Section 5 and one was called Section 2. Section 5 said, you know, these racist states and localities are really clever at coming up with ways to deprive people of the right to vote. So for example, they might close a polling place an hour early, or they might move it across the street or something. That looks, you know, relatively neutral, but they were often doing it in very calculated ways to make it harder for Black people to vote. And so the Voting Rights Act said, if you're going to make one of the changes to voting, even something that looks small, you got to get it pre-cleared and pre-approved by the Justice Department or by a federal court. And that regime worked incredibly well. The Voting Rights Act in that section was reauthorized into law time and again. In 2006, it was reauthorized by a vote in the Senate of 98-0 and a pretty equivalent vote in the House of Representatives. And it was challenged by, you know, by localities that wanted to essentially discriminate. And I had the privilege at the start of the Obama administration of defending Section 5 in the Supreme Court in a case called Nemudno. And the Supreme Court, in an 8-1 decision, said that the Voting Rights Act in Section 5 was constitutional. Only Justice Thomas dissented. But just 3 years later, in a case called Shelby County, the Supreme Court, in a 5-4 decision written by the Chief Justice, struck down Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act by saying it violated what he called the Equal Footing Doctrine. He said that there's a doctrine in the Constitution that requires states to be treated equally. Now, I know most of you, because, you know, if you're watching this, you're kind of into the Constitution, at least somewhat, and you've looked at it, you won't find that Equal Footing Doctrine in there, because it's not. There is no constitutional text that says states have to be treated equally. And they're not treated equally all the time. Like when some senator wants to get a military base built or, you know, a defense contract or whatever for their jurisdiction. Of course not. Very odd for strict constructionists to be saying that this violated the, you know, that the Voting Rights Act violated, this made up equal footing doctrine. But nonetheless, that is what the Supreme Court said. And Justice Ginsburg, in one of her greatest dissents, said that this was absolutely wrong and that Congress had the power to do this under the 14th and 15th Amendments. And she took issue with the majority's claim that basically there weren't major discriminations in voting anymore. She said, you know, that's kind of like throwing out your umbrella because you're no longer getting wet. And when the Supreme Court struck down Section 5, they said, ah, but there is this other thing, Section 2, and that you can still have. And Section 2 says if there's substantial discrimination because of a voting change, that that is something that you can sue for. Now, the problem with Section 2 is that it's really hard to sue after an election and you can't really undo it. So, you know, it's always been a much more difficult remedy, and there are very, very few Section 2 cases. But bringing you up to speed to up to today, just this week, the Supreme Court heard a big case involving Section 2 and what counts as something that is substantially discriminatory. So Arizona's legislature passed two different laws, One says that if you vote in the wrong precinct, your vote gets thrown out. And that obviously disproportionately, you know, hurts minorities because they tend to move more. And so their ballots tend to be cast in the wrong precinct more often. And Arizona also said it's a crime to collect ballots for people and drop them off. And Arizona's defense of this was, well, it's not substantially discriminatory because it's got to be really, really discriminatory in order for Section 2 to be violated. And there was only one problem with Arizona's argument here, and that is the text of the act itself. It doesn't say you got to be really, really discriminatory or anything like that. And so I think Arizona ran into real hot water very early on, and the Republicans who were defending this in the Supreme Court, they ran into real hot water early on because of the plain text of the act. Now, it is hard to know what substantially discriminatory means, and Justice Kagan asked a whole series of hypotheticals about this that really got at this. And by the way, if you want to listen to the oral argument, it's online, easily available, worth doing. She said, for example, suppose that in Arizona, African Americans tend to vote on Sundays disproportionately, and Arizona changed the polling hours on Sunday. Wouldn't that be substantially discriminatory? Well, the Republicans said no, it wouldn't be substantially discriminatory. And, you know, the whole idea of it, that, you know, and they even said, well, things like that would never happen, that they only exist in a fantasy world. You know, it's very odd that things like that, they say, won't exist in a fantasy world. But when it comes to voting fraud and the 0.0025% of possible rate of voting fraud and that how that justifies, according to them, the most severe kinds of voting restrictions. I mean, I can't ever get my mind around this. They might as well just go to the Supreme Court and just start yell, stop the count or stop the steal or things like that. I think we're probably unlikely to get a big holding from the Supreme Court. I think the Republicans went for broke and came up a dollar short. And the Republicans should have learned from Trump's many lessons. They should have learned from his many lessons before the Supreme Court, where he made a bunch of extreme arguments with the hope that the Supreme Court would meet him halfway. And they just didn't, time and again, over the last 3 years. So I think that these Arizona voting restrictions themselves may be upheld, we'll see, but I don't think we're going to see some massive change to Section 2. But that's not the ballgame. Section 2 has never been the heart of the Voting Rights Act. It's always been Section 5. And you've heard me talk a little bit about the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, and now with all of this background, I want to go through what that act does. Because what that act does is it creates a new Section 5, a preclearance regime, and, you know, for any jurisdiction that has a history of discrimination. And I think that is the kind of thing that is going to actually start undoing some of these very, very pernicious pernicious voting restrictions that have been are being passed out in the different states. And remember, the last time the Voting Rights Act, including Section 5, came to the Congress in 2006, it passed, as I said, unanimously in the Senate and pretty close in the House. I think the vote was 421-3 or something like that. Now, this year, Senate Republicans have already voted against convicting Donald Trump. They've already voted against coronavirus relief. And I'm sure some of them are thrilled about the voting rights legislation because it'll allow them to fulfill their quota for legislative supervillainy this year. And the fundamental question that has to be asked is, why is the Republican Party so scared of American voters? I mean, even 15 years ago, Republicans weren't as scared. Not now. You have a party that, when they're not pushing insurrection or pushing the big lie or pushing gerrymandering, they're pushing other voting restrictions. And this is really now the anti-democracy party. And I really wish Republicans brought the same kind of energy that they to fighting the coronavirus as they do to fighting these rights of people, of the American people, to vote. So with that, that's Courtside for tonight. Thanks for watching. I'll see you next Sunday. Tomorrow, the George Floyd trial starts. So watch.